Welcome back. This is the fourth episode of this four-part series, Extending Your Data Center to Microsoft Azure. If we recap a little bit, when we started the series, we have episode one that we have Janelle deploy the Active Directory, and then subsequently in episode two, we configure multi-factor authentication. That give us a directory services and also identity service, sort of like give us the identity that we can manage. And so in last episode, I show you the user experience, how you can deploy application actually as a service. As a service, I means on demand. So you can deploy anytime. When you hit enter, answer a simple question. At the end, you are not just getting a virtual machine, you're getting an application architecture with a running application instance. So the whole idea is really to accelerate the deployment, right? And so you can fulfill, you can scale out, scale in, you can deploy multiple instances, you can really respond to customer requests much, much more quickly. So in this last installment of this series, we are going to walk through that PowerShell script that to show you how it is organized, how it is executing all this instruction and make this whole thing happen. With me online is Janelle. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, Young. Nice to be back with you again.
There you go. So in this episode, we're going to walk through the PowerShell. And, you know, as we walk through that, give us some feedback in terms of, you know, if you see something we can improve, how we can do it better, or other places that we can also take advantage of what you have developed, let us know. And I think as we walk through this PowerShell, hopefully we are can kind of learn more about it, because I think being able to deploy application instance and not just virtual machine, but application instance, I think that is really something much, much better, what, you know, to fulfill the customer's request.
Sounds great.
Okay, so let's go ahead and open up our PowerShell and let's walk through it. So first I want to show you the architecture in terms of exactly what we deploy. And in this case, you can deploy to a virtual network if you have an pre-existing one. In other words, this script will not create virtual network for you. If you do want to deploy it to a virtual network, you need to create that virtual network first. So here I am showing something that if you want to deploy to a virtual network, for instance, in this case, it's deployed to a subnet called app-subnet and with particular IP address space. In this case, when you're asked in the program that do you want to deploy to a virtual network, and then you will put respond with a yes. And within the script itself, you have a chance to validate. So you need to validate that information beforehand. And then when you respond deploy to the subnet, it will go to the subnet that you have configured in place. Or you can simply just deploy to without a subnet. In that case, you will just deploy to your subscription using the resource there, and Microsoft Azure will do all the name resolution for you. In that case, this whole application will be just as a service, and then you access through a service. So you will let Azure do all the name resolution for you.
So this will just be in a standalone cloud service that just gets spun up?
Exactly. This will be just like something, you just want to deploy something to the cloud without really involving networking or name resolution whatsoever. If you do deploy to a subnet, then if the subnet, you do your own name resolution, and then you have to make sure everything kind of in place and hook up together.
Right. So the second option is really best for deployments that are really only going to exist in the cloud and be accessed from, you know, from the internet, as opposed to tying back into what could potentially be your on-prem network.
Exactly, because if you have a virtual network, then you can use point-to-site, site-to-site, you know, to extend your virtual network, and that's exactly right. And also, I just noticed I should have used option two, right? But anyway, so that's basically what you deploy. So if we look at the program now, when you first execute a program, you're going to see the disclaimer, and it is important to make you understand that this code, this script, I have not optimized it. There's very limited error handling, and the security, all the password, we pass with plain text. This is really for you to learn, use as a template to kind of learn how, you know, PowerShell and also Microsoft Azure infrastructure services work. And this is definitely not intended for production. I want to make sure you're aware of that. So please read the disclaimer, and there's also essential information in it. Now, in terms of the code, once you open it up, you can first collapse then into different regions. And you will notice there's actually five regions. And out of the four regions, I marked the do not change, because those are pretty much routine. In order to make sure that you have a predictable kind of outcome when you deploy this, it will be successful, it will be consistent. I kind of hard-coded a number of variables embedded in the program. But you can still customize it with a very easy thing to do. For instance, like the initials you can put in. That's basically used as identity, and I use it as a create a session tag. So anything that in this deployment that the resource that you create, it will have the identity on, you know, whatever the initial that you use as a prefix. So that's where you can put in. If you do want to make it interactively, you can also uncomment, comment the one that with the variable values in it, and then use it interactively for the user to put in the initial, which you use as an ID. That's pretty much all you need to do. If you do want to deploy to a virtual network, then in that case, you do need to kind of validate the virtual network. So you need to create a virtual network first, which I think, Janelle, in episode one, when you deploy the Active Directory, you create a virtual network first, right?
Right. Yeah, you could use the virtual network that we created in episode one, because it's there for you, and there's a whole, you know, separate subnet for app deployment in there. I wanted to just mention you the initials thing. You know, making something unique in Azure is really important because of the external DNS.
Right. And so both the initial and the virtual network, these are the kind of two pieces information that you can put in. Now, in terms of the virtual network, again, it has to pre-exist. So you want to make sure this information is correct. The region is very important. You want to make sure all this information validated. And then that's if you want to deploy to virtual network. If you don't have one, you don't need to worry about it. And you can just, when asked, you just say you don't want to deploy to a virtual network. So that's fine. So it's very simple customization. That's where you need to do. And the rest, we will go through it. But this is what you need to do at this time. After that, you can actually do F5 to run the script. But if we keep looking at what's in the more detail on what's in the script, this is where the deployment setting. In other words, when we deploy this certain setting, I have pre-configured and pre-populated those information for you. Here, the first thing we do is, in order to authenticate you, to make sure like we know what account you're going to use and what subscription you're going to use, first we use Azure AD. And I think, Janelle, in episode one, you used this as well, right?
Yes.
Right, so this is a this is a very convenient way for either script or any place in your application that you need an authentication. You can always use add Azure account, which basically will allow authenticate into your Azure account, right?
Whatever. It's going to prompt for your credentials. So you're going to, at that moment, you're going to have to put in the credentials you wanted to use.
Exactly. So this is a kind of interactively authenticate you without any preoccupation. If you don't use it this way, then you'll have to use the certificate method or something. Somehow we need to know which account you're going to use. Here we use an interactive way to kind of authenticate you. Once you get authenticated, the next thing is I need to know what subscription you use. Now, again, Janelle, when we first test that you kind of break my script immediately because you assign it to a different subscription as opposed to the default subscription, which is originally the scenario I was expecting.
Right. Leave it to me to break it for you. But yeah, you can have multiple subscriptions tied to your to the login that you're using, and there's one that's set by default, and everything that you deploy is going to go into that default subscription unless you specify otherwise. So yeah, I had picked my non-default subscription that I wanted things to go to, but yeah, the way your code was written at the time, it scattered things around a little.
Yes, so basically we need to authenticate you, so which account you're using, and then we pick up kind of the all the subscription you have, and we list it out, let you choose. So you will pick a subscription that's intended, and then in the user prompt, we also show that what the subscription has been picked, and here's why I show you. I use a BizSpark, and subsequently, once you pick the subscription, we're going to generate some of the deployment information in case of, like, in this case, assistant session tag and different directory and things like that. Now, once we have that deployment setting, in other words, I get your subscription, I create an ID session tag, and I create a local directory, I get everything prepared. Next thing is, I need to make sure that subscription is used as a kind of at a current subscription, so all subsequent operation will kind of operate against that subscription, and that's what that statement is about. And then we also need to associate that subscription with the storage account, make sure that everything kind of linked together. So we set the subscription as the current subscription, and then we're going to create a storage account. Once we have the storage account name, then we're going to associate that storage account with the subscription. So these two statements just kind of doing that, and in between the 277, 278, create a storage account for us. So at this time, we have the subscription, and we know we're going to deploy to a network or not, right? And then we also have the storage account. So we pretty much take care of the networking piece and the storage piece. And then
That storage account's really important because that's where you're going to be holding all your VMs.
That's right. That's where, you know, your VM, your VHD or data disk is going to store, right? And that's where the storage account is about. And then after that, we kind of keep going. And then as we deploy more, we're going to start configuring the VM before we actually go out and deploy it. And so in this case, you know, I put in some reference. I create some local directory. Here I create, on the desktop, I create an ITCAM folder. So later when we download the RDP file, you can find it there. The whole idea is you don't necessarily need to go in Azure Management Portal. In other words, you don't need to see the interface. The whole point about deploying as a service is you deploy it out, and then you can access to it. In this case, we can access to RDP file later when we download it. And that directory, that ITCAM is for that. Then we're getting ready to deploy. So before we do that, I give you some estimation in terms of how long does it take, because this is not like a two-minute thing. It depends on how many virtual machine, how many tiers that you have in your application architecture. This may take extensive time. So here I give you kind of a rough estimation such that you kind of expect you won't sit there and watch the program going. You can probably, you know, go have a cup of coffee, talk to your dog, and watch a movie or something.
Oh, I hope not watch a movie, but
that's right. That's right. And so, and also when you deploy, in this case, I don't deploy to the virtual network, so I need to specify which region. If you do deploy to a virtual network, that virtual network is associated with the region already, right? Now, in this case, I don't deploy to a virtual network, then I list it out I do a real-time listing of all the Azure data center facility or location is what they call a list out for you, and then you can pick and choose. So in this case, I pick Western Europe, and I guess I was in a European mode. But anyway, so after that, after you pick a region, and then it basically started, you know, got all the information ready. It created a storage account. I set the storage account as I show you in that script, and then the next thing is, all right, we got everything ready. Now we need to make sure which image that we're going to pick for your virtual machines. In this case, I configure two. One is a Windows Server 2012 R2. The other is a SQL backend. Now, the R2 will later configure as an IIS server. And the SQL image later, we will also attach database and, you know, the sample database and configure the SQL like in other words, like the authentication method, the firewall rule, and all that. But here, I'm showing you how we pick the image. What I do is I have a little routine called get image name. And so you give me a string pattern, in this case, Windows Server 2012 R2 data center, and I will use that pattern to pick up the latest image based upon that string pattern. In other words, the line 205, that will give us the latest Windows Server 2012 R2 data center image, and the line 207 will give us the SQL image on that. So once we have the image name, we're going to plug in the VM. So subsequently, what we have is we see additional configuration we want to put in. In this case, we also put in the VM extension. And in this case, it's a BGInfo. BGInfo give you that desktop background. When you deploy virtual machine in Microsoft Azure, you're going to see the desktop background with like IP address, the host name, the different information about this particular virtual machine that you deploy. That's what that BGInfo is about.
3GFO has been around forever.
Yes,
it's still useful.
Yes, that's the system internal tool, one of the utilities that we frequently use. Now, the BGinfo, Janelle, interestingly, they have a different, that object have different information that we need to put in. So what I did is I just do the, kind of get the get the VM extension object, and then later I'll reference independent component, like what version, what name of that. And so the line 211 would basically get the VM extension object. And in this particular one, the extension name is BGinfo. So that's why I get in the BGinfo object and just kind of get it ready. And the next, I kind of, you know, setting up all the custom extension as well. In this case, I have a source directory for me to grab the custom extension. The custom extension, as you know, Janelle, it's the PowerShell script that we will execute after the VM is deployed. So when we deploy the VM, we will pick up the image name, we will pick up the VM extension. After we finish deploying the VM, then if we specify custom extension, which is PowerShell script, it will the system will then execute that for us. In this case, we use the custom extension to really configure. For instance, we configure the IIS for the front end. So within that particular script that specify in 224, that file URL, that PowerShell script, we will set up the firewall rule. We turn off IE enhanced security. We will install IIS. We will download the application file and later extract it and put it in a wwwroot. Basically do some post-installation configuration for the application. And on the SQL one, which is 229, that particular script that point by the file URI, that one will actually configure, for instance, the SQL authentication, make it a mixed authentication. It will download the database. We have a sample database we're going to download, and then it's going to attach that database. It will also set up some login for us. It will set up the firewall rule. For instance, we're going to open 1443 for inbound connection. We're going to allow ICMP ping. So things like that. That's all within the script. So this is our custom extension. So at this time,
Sorry, don't interrupt, but to make sure I understand this correctly, so we've got a big PowerShell script, and then within that, as the machine builds, once the operating system is all set up, it's going to go grab these additional PowerShell scripts and run them internally.
That's correct. That's the custom extension. So you're absolutely right. If you specify the custom extension, this is the beauty of Microsoft Azure Infrastructure as a Service. It not only allows you to deploy a VM with some pre-built image, right? And then you can also customize it with this custom extension. Now, with the PowerShell in place, there's many scenario and opportunity for us. This PowerShell, I happen to grab it from a particular share folder, right? You can also reference some asset in Azure Automation, for instance, right? So there's a different places that you get those PowerShell script. Either they are in the library in Azure already, or maybe on-premise, maybe somewhere you put it in a GitHub, right? Things like that. And so you can reference that and configure that. So if you engineer your application, you know, well, then those script can be generic, right? So you can have a script just doing the particular configuration have. In this case, let's say, you know, you set up firewall rule, you set up IIS, and you set up particular share folder or something, right? You make it generic. Then as you deploy, you can kind of reference this particular script to do particular things for you.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think this is great. So this is the custom extension that we are going to include in our deployment. So after that, right, and so we have the virtual machine configured. We know what custom extension we're going to use. And the next thing is you need to tell me, well, how are you going to architect your application? Do you have a mid-tier, back-end, front-end? What do you have? And also within each tier, how are you going to configure them? So in this case, what I have is I put in a front end and back end. So this is a two-tier application. And in the front end, if you look at the line 238, that's where I define the front end. So the front end, I give it a name called web. So it's a web tier, right? And then within that, I have a VM configuration. So the ideal is within the tier, I give a identical configuration. So this will be like your IIS front end. All the IIS, they are identical. In this case, I can load balance them, right? So this is how I configure it. And this is also kind of how you organize your data, which is really has a lot of impact in terms of how you can process them. So what I use it, I use kind of a hash tag, hash file type of things. And so, I'm sorry, hash table is what I'm looking for. So I use hash table a lot. So in the front end, if you look at line 238, you know, I have a big hash table. And within the hash table, I have a name element, I have the VM element. The VM element itself is a hash table. The beauty of hash table is you can add or remove components without really without really any concern in terms of, you know, the impact to the program. If you need to reference a new component, a new element, you can just add it in and later reference it. You can also add it in and don't reference it, right? It's not going to kind of change the data structure that significantly, as opposed to if you use an array, for instance, like you added an element, then maybe the size of the array is going to change, right? And if you reference the size, you know, there's a different complication on that, but the hash table is kind of one of my favorite data structure in PowerShell that I use it a lot, pretty extensively. But here within the VM hash table, I give it a name. Now, the name itself is an array. So if I want to deploy, let's say, 3 virtual machines into the front end, all I need to do is in line 241, I would put web front end 01, and I do a comma. I will add another web front end 02, all the way, if I want to add 5, that's going to deploy 5 machines. So what you specify is basically a machine name, and that's an array. So that allows you to really give you flexibility if you want to kind of change your configuration or test something real quick or take something out real quick, you can do that. In terms of image, that reference the whole image object that we get back, the image name we get back, and there's admin password. And the reason I put the admin password associated with the VM is that in case that you're going to deploy out and a particular VM, you want to give it a different name for whatever the reason. And here I show you as a plain text. It just references a variable, which is plain text there. You can certainly do encryption and do different things there. There's many opportunities for you to make it more secure and optimize it. And then the service name, I use the session tag as a service name. And I also define the size of the virtual machine, the EP, which is the endpoint. Again, here is an array. So if you want to add additional endpoints, all you have to do is just really replicate like 247 and change the name, and that will be another endpoint for you. Or if you want to take it out, you can just delete one of them. Again, it's an array, so as you add more elements in it, it will automatically kind of loop through and add additional endpoints or take out endpoints, you know, that way. And after that, the 248, that's the availability set. And so we also can set up availability set on that. And after that is the VM extension, which is the VG info, and then the custom extension, which I define in for this front end, it will be set up IIS. So basically, it's the same thing for the back end. It's very similar. And other than I also have a data disk attached to it, because normally when you deploy a SQL Server, you will attach data disk to store your database. As a, you know, just similar to Janelle, similar to what we do for our domain controller, normally we will have like a data disk so we can put sys volume in a separate data disk. Right. And so that's basically your architecture. So if you have, let's say if you have a mid-tier, you can create something similar to the front end or to the back end, create something and you can name it like mid-tier or whatever the name you're going to use. And you can simply add it into this application architecture, that array. So when it deploy, it will deploy one element at a time. So it will deploy the front end and then deploy the mid-tier and then deploy the back end if you do it that way. So that's kind of how you can architect your application. So once we have that, you know, this front end, this back end piece, we are getting ready to deploy it. Now, specifically, when you create a storage account, by default, it's a GRS. I think when you create a storage account, if you don't specify anything, it's going to be a GRS, which means you will have a geo-redundancy. And Janelle, in that case, you pay twice the storage.
Right. You do pay twice the storage, but you get that extra layer of, you know, warm fuzzy because of the redundancy, you know. Yep. I like geo-replicated storage, geo-redundant storage, and I like not having to think about it.
Right. And then so this is really depends on your application, right? If you want your redundancy and then you really don't need to specify what type, by default it's a GRS, or if you need some other type, for instance, like you need to read access GRS or different things, you can specify here. Here for this demo,
you might have some corporate policies that require you to not be using geo-redundant, or depending on your architecture, if you have the same thing spread across different regions already, you might not necessarily want the geo-redundant storage.
Absolutely, and this is where you specify that. For this demo, just which kind of to simplify it, I change it to LRS, which is local redundancy, local redundant storage. Right, so that piece takes up our subscription and associated with a storage account, and that's where you see in the user experience that it actually gets created. Now, after that, then we started to deploy our virtual machine because at this time we have our storage ready, right, and we associate with the subscription and everything is ready. So we start looping through our basically main loop, which what we will do is we will get all this specification that we have defined in the script, and then we're going to start to deploy the virtual machine. And what we're going to do is when you deploy something, you need to have a service first. Now, if you look at the fabric concept, right, the compute network storage, the network, which earlier in the execution we specified we want to deploy to a network or we don't want to deploy a network, in that case we specify a region, that particular juncture it actually specified the networking piece for us. Either you do your own name resolution, or Azure do the name resolution, either you're in a subnet, a virtual network, or not. But that kind of determined the networking fabric for you. And later, when we created storage, that decided the storage fabric for you. And so what we need now is a compute a fabric for us to actually deploy the virtual machine. And the compute in Azure is represented by the service. So we first have to create a service if we don't have one. If we do have one, then we can go on. So in this particular piece of code, it's checking based upon your definition of your tier, the front end, the back end. Within that, we have a service name. So you will first check, do I have the service in place or not? If I don't, then go ahead and create one. Right. And if I do have a service, and then use that service. And this is where you're expecting to see this error message if you are trying to create a service that's not in place. So when I do the query, when the program do the query, it will get the error message. They probably different ways that you can kind of avoid or make the message not shown. Here we just kind of leave it as it is, so you kind of know what's going on behind the scene. So once you have that, and then we're going to start it to deploy, right? In this case, you see that error message, and subsequently we create the service. After that, we're getting to deploy. So we started building our virtual machine configuration. In this case, we have the image name on line 353. We have the image name. We decide what size we want to deploy it, right? And do we have VM extension, things like that. So put this all together. Right, and also started from line 363, we kind of check. Did you define a data disk? If you do, I'm going to attach a data disk. Well, the configuration, we're going to put a data disk configuration there. Do you have endpoint defined? If you do, we're going to take that endpoint configuration and make it in place. And all that in 424, that's where you decided if the VM extension has been defined. In this case, we define big info. That's where we plug in the big info. Now we have to deploy the virtual machine before we can actually do the custom extension. So we will check the custom extension later. But at this time, after we kind of figure out all the configuration, and then we go ahead and deploy it. Now, once we deploy it, we will also download the RDP file, which is the line 510, right, where we actually download the RDP file. We actually do the deployment in 443 and 456, right? That's where we do the deployment. After that deployment, we will check 470, see if we have a custom extension. If we do, we will then execute a custom extension. When we finish execution of that particular VM, we then download on line 510 the RDP file to the local folder, which is the IT cam on our desktop folder. So that's kind of the main loop of the deployment process. It will loop through this for each VM in each tier, right? So after you finish all this, and that concludes the deployment. Now, you may think about, like, can we do this concurrently? You know, yes and no. It depends how you architect your application. Because when you deploy a VM, it will actually lock down the service name for a period of time, because it needs to update that service such that after the VM is deployed, it will know that this service now will be respond for this VM. And if you deploy the second one, it needs to know, okay, now I have two VM can respond to this particular service, right? So when it deploy, it actually lock down the service name. So you cannot, at least, you know, you're not able, you cannot deploy like two virtual machines to the same service at the same time. It has to be serial at that time. But if you architect your application for multiple services, for whatever the reason, let's say you put your front end in one service, your back end in another service, and maybe like Janelle did in the first episode, that deploy another domain controller, that may be in other services, then these three services you can make it concurrent, right? But for a particular service, you do need to kind of serialize that deployment. For user experience, you will see different things kind of echo to the execution log, and also echo back to host. You will see that what's been deployed and the new Azure VM that actually gets deployed out. After that, you see that green with black background, that message telling you which custom extension we pick up and with what parameter, what argument list that we feed in. In this case, you know, there's a number of argument that we feed it in. This is also kind of allows you to verify that you can go back and look at your architecture, kind of verify, you know, I define three arguments to pass it over. Do I see three arguments here? Things like that. And after that, you execute the custom extension, you do need to update the Azure VM. And this is where you see kind of the towards the bottom of the user experience, you see the update Azure VM. And after that, we download the RDP file, and that's where you also see the message kind of echo back. And towards the end, when we finish all that, right, this will be the web tier. So this is kind of the first tier. Within that, we have only one virtual machine, you will deploy that. If we have multiple, it will loop through that. And I also give you some estimation in terms of each tier, that give you some idea. And after that, it moved to the next tier, right? It will move to the data tier. And again, you will see the new Azure VM deploy. And after that, you see the custom extension. In this case, you notice that it's picking up the SQL provision script, right? And with six arguments that pass into the custom extension. After that, we do the update and we download the RDP file. And we pretty much finished that. Before that, you know, I kind of looped through the IT camp folder to show you all the RDP file that's available. That's another way for you to verify that, okay, exactly how many virtual machines I actually deploy. And those RDP file are available for you to access the virtual machine directly. So you don't necessarily need to get into the Azure management portal to do that. And so when we finish, right, I also put a message saying, you know, this may take a little bit longer because it does take time for the customer, for the custom extension to sync in. So you may be, if you go to the management portal, you maybe see the VM like in a running state, like everything's fine, but actually behind the scene, it's actually doing the custom extension. So when you finish deployment, you know, do give it a few more minutes before you actually try to run the application. And so within the script at this time, you know, all this custom extension, everything is placed. And this is to show you that within the script where we pass the arguments, right, and where we specify the custom extension. And also, where do we get the custom extension, all right? That is actually defined in the source directory in the script. So we will go there and pick up all those two custom extension script for this deployment. So if you look at the kind of user experience, the log that you see when you execute a script, that's where I specify where you pick up the script, or what argument list you pass through. As you develop your new script, this piece sometimes can be very tricky because you want to make sure you pass the script with the right variables, and also in some way, I also keep it in sequence. In other words, on the receiving end, you also define the parameter. So I try to make everything kind of consistent. That really kind of simplified the debug process that you need to go through. And then this is showing what's actually in the custom extension. This is showing you what's in the IIS piece, right? And that's where the parameter that's passing through. And within the script, I also create a folder that we have some logging going on. And this is just show you that, you know, for debugging process, you know, you can always create something on the fly, and then so you can get some information as it executes. This is where to disable the IE enhanced security setting. With the IE enhanced security setting, employees like you get like 20 prompts before you can actually see something. So this is to disable it. So when you test it, you know, it'd be much more convenient. And also at the same time, depends on your application. You know, you may or may not want to disable the IE enhanced security setting. And then we create a firewall rule. Here, if you look at the kind of the display name, we enable HTTP, and we also enable HTTPS, right? We create two endpoints such that we can kind of serve the web request. We also enable ICMP before we do the ping, so it allows you to, if needed, you can ping it. Now, this is just for demonstration, right? If you don't need it, don't add it in. But this is how you can add or create the firewall rule. Then we install the IIS, and Janelle, I think episode one, we install the domain controller, we can also use this, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, you could use this. I mean, we did this more manually when we installed Active Directory. You actually remote it in, but you typed essentially the same PowerShell line, you know, except it was install Windows feature, except it was a, you know, Active Directory domain services instead of web server.
That's right. Now, just notice that the install Windows feature, this is part of the server manager module, right? So if you are writing this script and you're doing it, let's say you're doing Windows 8.1 or Windows 8 environment, right, which is not a server, so you may not have that actually server module in place. So if you actually want to run this on a Windows 8 workstation, you may find out not recognize it. In that time, you can go to add Windows features in control panel, the add remove program, and then add a new feature. Just make sure you add the remote server administration tools, RSAT, I think. Add that. That will bring in the server module. Or you can just go to, you know, Microsoft.com and search for the server module and go ahead and install it and, you know, import it into it, and then you can test that install Windows feature locally. In this case, because the IIS script is actually executed on the server, remember the front end is a Windows Server 2012 R2 data center edition, so we can actually execute the install Windows feature right there because the server manager is included. So that's where you install IIS, we download a zip file which has the application, and so we download the zip file and then we extract it. Right, we extract the zip file, and then we within the zip file there's another zip file. So we extract that zip file. That's the application. We'll put it in the wwwroot. Right, that's the application. So this is basically installing the application. And here we just do an X copy installation. Right, in your scenario, this may be custom extension, maybe another PowerShell script that you reference that you will bring in at this time to do an installation procedure for you. Now, it depends on how you install your application. It could be put in a DLL in place. It could be create additional resources or what have you. But here I'm showing you something real simple. I'll do an X copy. But the significance is at this time we are deploying the application. And then after that, right, I also create a test page. Here I basically create a simple server variable page, and I put a ITCAM logo in it, and I show you which server name. Because what we're going to do is, if you deploy multiple server in the front end, this will allow you to kind of verify using this page is itcamp.aspx, allows you to verify, you know, which server is responding to the particular request. So if you have multiple front-end server kind of in a load balance situation, then you can use this page to verify which server is responding to a particular request. So that's kind of, I just create a page on the fly and place it into the wwwroot as well. And then I just restore IIS, and that's it. That's how we configure IIS for that custom extension. For the SQL extension, again, we're passing six variables. We create a local folder for to keep the kind of the logging going on. And disable, i.e. enhance security setting, all the firewall rule. In this case, we set up 1433 for the inbound connection. We also have the browser, SQL browser set up, firewall rule for that. And then we define, we basically attach a data disk. At this time, we initialize that data disk, and we also make, that will be an F drive in our scenario. And so I also create folder there, so later we can reconfigure the default folder for SQL Server. And then we download the sample database from the internet, and we get that sample database in place, and then we enable the mixed mode. Now, some of the setting we have doesn't have to be this particular sequence. You can kind of mix and match or whatever fits your need. But here, we turn on the mixed mode authentication. And then we kind of set up the SQL. In this case, we set up a different database. We set up the registry for the default folder. And then within the SQL, we actually attach the database. So there's a sample database, and we attach that. And here, we also create some login. For that database, we create a login, make sure the user's database owner. In this case, it's called, we put the admin in. So we make sure the admin have adequate access to it if we need to. And finally, we also, again, it's a setting up the database. So later when we do connection, all this will be in place. And that's pretty much what we have for the SQL Server. And so what I have shown you is kind of a main script that we configure the configuration of the virtual machine. We have a front end tier, we have the back end. Within each tier, we have the configuration of the virtual machine, which we have maybe endpoints, maybe data disk, maybe different configuration in it, right? And do we attach the VM extension? Do we have custom extension? We have all that. And then I went through a main loop to kind of get the configuration, set it all up, and then we deploy it, and then we execute a custom extension, and then we download RDP file, right? Within the custom extension, I just show you, one is the setup IIS, the other is setup SQL Server. And so after we deploy the virtual machine, the program will then understand where you have a custom extension, will pick up the particular script that we specify and go and execute that. In our case, our front end will execute the IIS piece, so it will configure become an IIS server, and for the backend, it will configure the SQL Server. So as we finish this all, it put everything in place, connect the front end with the backend. At this time, we actually have an application in place, right? Because the application is deployed to the IIS front end. So when we finish deployment, if you access the service, right, and it will actually bring up the application. The IIS will actually bring up the application for you. So that's how we deploy application as a service. So Janelle, what do you think?
I think it's kind of amazing. There's so many different kind of components on the back end that make it really, really simple to do on the front, but really, really easy to kind of customize and change depending on what you need for your application.
Right. And I think this is a good exercise for people trying to better understand cloud computing, better understand actually Azure Infrastructure Services, because this kind of show you, using PowerShell, right, show you all the configuration that you need to think about, that you need to have answers, right? You need to have the values for it, and also show you how you can put in a custom extension or put in virtual machine extension, how you reference them in a program, how you take the custom extension, and within the custom extension, there's different components that you can set it up, right? So I feel overall this is a great exercise, even though you are not a deployment specialist or something, but I think this help you really better understand what's happening behind the scene when you actually deploy an application, what kind of process you need to go through, right? The configuration of it, the networking piece, the storage piece, the compute piece, and the extension of it, right? The custom extension, how do I use it? And within the custom extension, You know, what do I need to do? How do I download a zip file, unzip the file, and then put it in the right place for me? How do I configure a test page, right? I put in that little test page that you can kind of create something like that for you to quickly verify, do I get a correct deployment or not? Now, Janae, I have to tell you, though, to test this thing, one thing I feel a little bit tedious is because each deployment takes about 30 minutes, and sometimes you don't you don't know what's wrong until you reach the end, right? But first
right.
You reach the end and you realize the IIS is not showing correctly, right? So the iteration is that's a little bit tedious, and then, so that takes a lot of time. So I would say, you know, do your best practices. So engineer application and put the, you know, do it right the first time. That pays off big time.
It's kind of funny, Young, that you say, you know, watching this iterate and that 30 minutes is a long time. It's really funny how our perception has changed because it's like, wow, 30 minutes is a long time to deploy, you know, and completely configure two servers, where all of these things that you've showed us built into this PowerShell are things that we would have potentially done manually not that long ago, you know, depending on the size of our infrastructure.
You're absolutely right. As we kind of move to the next stage and our expectations is kind of go with it and getting higher and higher.
Because if I did this manually, it would have been an all-day affair, you know, installing IIS and then downloading some stuff and putting it in the right place and configuring all these things. You know, it would have been all day, you know, and, you know, it's like you're like 30 minutes. Here you go.
Well, great. Janelle, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did. It's a lot to learn, though. You look at all of this stuff, and it's just like, wow, there's like so many moving parts, but there's a lot of moving parts in the things that we do, you know, every day on our on-prem data centers, and we're just so used to them, you know, that this is just something else. Learning PowerShell is just something else we're going to, you know, get used to.
And you know what? We have really go through a long way, right, from episode 1 to episode 4. So let's do a recap. So Janelle, in episode 1, we deploy the Active Directory in Microsoft Azure. And then episode 2, you configure multi-factor authentication. So we got Active Directory in place, got multi-factor in place in kind of relatively easy way without really deploying any hardware.
Right, right. And, you know, now that we've done a web app with this, you know, SQL on the back end, you could potentially tie into the Azure Active Directory to make people be able to access that application depending on what's running.
There you go. So this can be really a branch office type environment, right? So if we can literally automate this whole thing if we want to. It's probably just take a little bit longer, right, adding the deploy the Active Directory and authenticate configure multi-factor authentication, and then this application piece. But literally, you know, you can kind of envision that we can really automate a lot of things. So deploying, for instance, a branch office is no longer a 3 months or even 3 weeks or even 3 days project. If you have the configuration in place, if you test it out, you got all the information in place, the actual deployment can be really speedy.
Right, and for things like, you know, wanting dev and prod and different test environments to test things or disaster recovery testing and things like that, I mean, I know when you start disaster recovery testing, one of the first things you do is build a domain controller. So having that sort of stuff all sort of scripted out and ready to go really is going to, you know, ease the process of testing these things.
Exactly. So, you know, that's for production or for your development or for your testing environment. Now, even just for individual IT pro, you can also use this to your benefit. You know, you can literally set up an entire enterprise Active Directory environment with application deploy, and you can test out either security, your group policy, your application deployment, your application development, what have you, right? I think this is great. This is like my data center in Azure.
I don't have to run anything in my living room anymore.
You
know,
go.
You don't have to hold on to all that hardware and kind of, you know, figure out where you're going to put that and get that going. You can just build whatever you want, you know, right in the cloud.
So I think extending your data center to Microsoft Azure really applies to big company, big and small, and even for IT pro, you can use that to your benefit to test it out.
Yeah. Makes it really easy to learn. You know, if you're looking for, you know, certifications and studying, you know, now you actually have access to the power of server and all of this networking, you know, without having to build this infrastructure.
There you go. Janelle, it was such a fun time I have, and thank you so much for coming on and do this four-part series with me, and I had a great time.
I had a great time, too. Thanks for inviting me.
For all those IT pro out there, and before I finish this series, I want to let you know our great producer, our magical producer, Chris Caldwell, behind the scene, make this all happen and editing all those ugly pieces for us so you can enjoy this whole delivery. Thank you, Chris. And for your IT pro out there, we'll see you in another episode of Virtually Speaking.